Welcome, Weirdos. I'm Darren Marlar, and this is Weird Darkness. Here you'll find stories of the paranormal, supernatural, legends, lore, crime, conspiracy, mysterious, macabre, unsolved, and unexplained. If you're new here, welcome to the show, and if you're already a member of this weirdo family, please take a moment and invite someone else to listen. Recommending Weird Darkness to others helps make it possible for me to keep doing the show. And while you're listening, be sure to check out WeirdDarkness.com, where you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Minds, MeWe, and more, along with the Weird Darkness Weirdos Facebook group. This episode's different than most you'll hear, as this is a Fireside Frights episode. I strip away all the fancy editing, the sound effects, and the music, and I just tell stories by the fire. All stories on Fireside Frights episodes are submitted by you, so if you have a tale that you'd like to tell for a future Fireside Frights, just go to WeirdDarkness.com and click on Tell Your Story. Now, bolt your doors, lock your windows, turn off your lights, and come with me into the Weird Darkness. This first story is from Weirdo Family member Jack. I write this experience as a way to possibly relieve long-standing stress and fright that I've had to deal with personally since it occurred to me. I would hope that you'll be able to respect what happened to me and take it for what it's worth. Just know, this experience still haunts me to this day, and I have only ever told one other person about this, and they believed me but, due to my occupation, urged me to never speak of it in any serious fashion to anyone else. I suppose I am getting a little ahead of myself, so I'll start from the beginning. For the sake of me telling this, you can refer to me as Jack. I live in a predominantly rural county in southeastern Georgia. I have worked as a police officer at one of the agencies near my hometown for nearly 10 years. I've seen a lot in my time, including arson, assault, murder, rape, crimes against children, etc., and I felt that I had really seen it all. Sure, I have the occasional nightmare about a gruesome scene that I had processed or a helpless victim that I interviewed, but what I saw one night on my way home completely changed my perspective on things that occur in this world. I work the midshift, meaning that I come in the late afternoon and I'll work until just after 2 a.m. As I said before, I work at an agency away from where I actually live, approximately 30 minutes from my house. I can still remember it like it was yesterday. I had just clocked out, climbed into my police car, and started on my way home. The work for that day was not completely overwhelming as it is sometimes, and I've always worked these hours, so I know I was not sleepy or tired in any way. I take a series of back roads to get back to the family farm where my house resides, and there are not many houses along the way, mostly just fields and pine forests. As I was nearing the last road to turn on to get home, I can see in my headlights a young boy running for dear life across the road and into a freshly harrowed field with no crops yet planted. There are only three houses on my road. One is mine, the other my parents', and the third lives nearly a mile from my house, none of which had young children. And I live nearly 5 miles away from the nearest town, so my suspicion was already heightened that the boy had to have been brought here and was running from something. My radio was dead from working my shift, and I did not have a replacement battery, so I could not call out for assistance, which, after what I saw next, it was probably for the better. I exited my car and called out for the boy to stop and come to me. I could still see his outline through the aid of my flashlight, still running through the field. I noticed his clothes seemed rather outdated, almost like he was wearing something from the 1800s. A white shirt and old, tattered overalls and a round bill hat. Again, something weird. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, I saw no less than 6 men on horseback crossing exactly where the boy had just ran and appeared to be chasing him. I nearly fell on my ass by the shock that I just endured seeing. By this time, I'd reached for my service weapon and pointed it at the men and ordered them to stop. They ignored me as if I wasn't there at all. I then jumped the ditch by my car and chased after them on foot, hoping that maybe I could catch up to them and see what was going on and why they were chasing this boy. I was able to keep my flashlight trained on the men even as they were steadily getting ahead of me. I then noticed in utter confusion that they were all dressed up like Civil War-era soldiers, blue coats, rifles, equipment, the whole nine yards. Shortly thereafter, I lost sight of the men and the boy. I tried to look down and follow their tracks, but to my confusion, nothing was there, no tracks or anything. I then began to frantically search, hoping that I could stop whatever was about to happen to this boy. I then could hear what sounded like a child screaming and laughter coming from the top of a small hill about 300 yards away from me. I then ran as hard as I could to the hill with my light and gun trained on the hill. As I approached, I could again see the outline of the men and horses on top of the hill in a circular formation. Again, I yelled for the men to stop and to drop their weapons, or I would shoot, just as I had been trained to do. I may have been about 100 yards away when I noticed the boy in the center of the circle crying. I could hear the boy telling them, "I don't have anything! Leave us alone!" Then one of the men said, "You little rebel, give me the bag!" And then saw one of the horses rise up and come down on the boy. He made a scream I won't forget. By this time, I was closing in on the men and began firing my gun at them. I had to have shot at least four times before re-engaging commands for them to stop. When the smoke from my pistol cleared, I noticed no one was there. No horses, no men dressed like soldiers, no boy, nothing. Not even a single track other than my own. At this point, all I could think is, I'm hallucinating. Is my mind playing tricks on me? I made a futile search of the area to find some piece of evidence as to what I had just witnessed, but came up with nothing. I then begrudgingly decided to walk back to my car, believing that maybe I was far more tired than I thought, or maybe I had just seen an animal or something. Anything other than what I know I had seen. I decided to go home and check back in the morning after getting some rest. There was no point in trying to report the incident at this point because there wasn't really anything to report. I'd come up with nothing. The next day, I went to the area and found nothing other than my shoe prints of what had occurred the night prior. A couple of days passed, and I wrote it off as maybe a case of extreme exhaustion or working too hard. I then took a couple of days off and went fishing with my dad on our property that backs up to the field where I'd seen the incident. We got to talking about guy stuff and my work and hunting, football, you know, normal stuff. Then I asked him how long our family had been on this farm, a question that surprisingly I had never asked before. My dad, being a keen student of history, explained that our family had been here since just before the Civil War. I then asked, was there ever any battles or anything that happened here? He said, not really, but when General Sherman made his march to the sea and burned his way through the state, Union troops did come on the land. He said that his great-great-grandmother was here with her youngest son, his great-uncle, who was 10 at the time when they came. He then said, the way my great-grandma told the story was when they came, they started burning her mother's crops and shooting her pigs. She then gathered up a bag full of food and put it in a sack and told her son John to run and hide in the woods behind the house and wait until they left. John then snuck out of the house and ran, but them Yankees saw him when he went into the woods and chased after him on their horses. Dad then pointed to the area I had been days before, and my blood began to run cold. He continued, back there in that next field behind us, the soldiers caught up to him and cornered him, wanting the food that he had on him. He didn't hand them the bag, so one of the soldiers reared his horse back and trampled John, breaking his leg. They then left him there. After they had done taking everything from the farm they could, they left and told her where to find her son, if he was still alive. Tears began to well in my eyes as he continued. He said that she found her son barely alive from his injuries. She was able to save him, but he walked with a limp for the rest of his life, and when he died, he was buried near the hill where the soldiers cornered him. That was when I realized that everyone I saw that night never noticed me, because they weren't really there. I don't know if they were ghosts or what. I've never been much of a believer in such things, but after what I witnessed, I don't really have a doubt anymore. Take the story for what you will. Again, I know what I saw, but I'll be damned if I'll ever be able to really comprehend it. This story comes from a woman who we will call Ash. She sent us this story. Hi, I recently found your podcast when I got called back into work and I thought, hey, I have a few paranormal things that happened to me. I'm only 16 and these happened when I was younger, so I don't remember everything, but I have three stories I remember decently well. The first one appeared when I was about 7 or 8. I slept with my parents at night, and one weekend morning, either Saturday or Sunday, I woke up late, around 9 or 10 o'clock, and I wasn't hungry, and I wanted to watch TV, so I turned it on and watched some SpongeBob. This TV was old, broken power button and gone to static or just colored lines quite often. While I was in the middle of the episode, that happened, and I decided to go unplug the TV and just go have breakfast. As I was about to move, two pale, white hands came up from the foot of the bed, and they looked dirty. I slowly walked on the bed towards them to see whose arms they were, and under them were nothing but a pile of dirty clothes. I jumped back so fast I almost hit my head on the window. The hands were in the way of the door, so crying, I jumped over the arms and ran down the hallway, down the stairs, and to my mom, who was folding laundry at the dining room table. The scariest thing about this story to me is no one remembers it the same. My mom says it was just me and her on a weekday, and my dad says that he was out getting cigarettes. The second story, I was 8-ish. I was watching the movie Insidious, and at the end, my opinion, scariest part of the movie. I looked over to my grandfather's urn. I was close to him, and he died a few years earlier. My mom and I watched things like Ghost Hunters, so me being the dumb kid I was said, "Grandpa, if you're there, touch my foot." Something then proceeded to grab my foot and pull me down to the floor. I saw nothing under the couch, and I ran to my mother crying. I still, to this day, don't sit on a couch with my feet hanging down. The last one was more recent. I was arguing with my now ex-boyfriend, and I was already upset. I decided to try again and talk to my grandfather. I just kind of started talking about how things were going, talking about my sister, he died before she was born, and just life in general. In my closet is my desk, and I share a room with my sister, so I use my closet as my own space. It's also where I have everything left from my grandpa. I heard things crash down and fall behind the first door I had on the rail. I had my glasses off because I was crying, and I had them next to me on my bed, or at least should have had them there. I managed to stop crying, and there in my closet, on my desk, were my glasses. I have since decided to not try and contact my grandfather again. I have more stories in less detail, and I know some from my parents if you're interested. But other than that, I love the podcast. It really helps my long shifts fly. Keep it up. Thank you, Ash. And yeah, if you have those other stories that are told by your parents, please send them in. I'd appreciate that. You know, sometimes, rather than just staying anonymous, somebody will give a pseudonym to use. And this one comes from Weird Wanderer. At least I assume that's not his real name. Gosh, I hope not. What cruel parents he would have. Okay, anyway, here is Weird Wanderer's story. We went on a tour of the western states for our honeymoon on an impromptu Jeep camping trip. We mostly explored national parks and historic sites. While we were in the state of Arizona, visiting the Grand Canyon for the first time, my wife and I decided to research other attractions in Arizona. I found a list of haunted places in the state, and Slaughterhouse Canyon popped up near the top. The legend goes that a family homesteaded in the canyon many years ago. The father was a prosecutor and hunter who would leave and then be gone for weeks at a time looking for gold and wild game. One time, however, he failed to return. The children slowly began to starve, and their screams for food began to drive the mother insane. Finally, she lost her mind completely and killed her children and chopped them up into pieces before killing herself. We decided to go drive down the canyon road and check this out. We arrived in Kingman, Arizona, and drove out to the edge of town. There's a housing development at the beginning, but the road quickly turned to gravel. We could see a truck ahead of us, which pulled out into a sandy wash. We continued on down the road and saw an old shack painted with graffiti. The air felt electrically charged, and in spite of myself, I felt a chill run down my spine. We continued driving further down the road. Up ahead, we saw a cluster of old buildings. It looked deserted, but I could feel something strange in the air. Like it was not deserted, someone was watching us. We decided to turn around and go back. As we drove back up the road, there was an older gentleman walking his dog in the wash by the truck that we had passed earlier, and he waved at us. It still didn't seem like a good place to linger, though. I can't really explain the feeling of the place, but even in broad daylight, it felt ominous, and there was a kind of a "the hills have eyes" kind of vibe in the air. If you're in that area and you want a spooky adventure, you can check out Slaughterhouse Canyon, but go at your own risk. It's not a place to spend a long time or camp, and that's for sure. Laura Daniel sent in this story. My story starts off with my sister telling me about a house out in the country that was abandoned and for sale that had trees around it. When I meant trees around, it was like a forest in the middle of just fields around it, like an island. She told me this. I was just curious about it, like I wanted to see it, and I told her to take me to it the next day. So she says yes, she would show me the house that she was talking about because I thought it was all lies what she told me. And I drive, it was like 15 minutes away to the place. I saw it was like she said, like it was a so creepy place that I was like, WTF. So I drive by and I do a U-turn back to our house. A couple of days pass, like 3 days. I was hanging out with friends at night, talking about ghost stories, and that's when I told them about the house, how it looks creepy, and that's when they wanted to go see it, thinking I was scared of a creepy house for no reason. So they wanted me to take them to this house. So I did not want to go along, but they really wanted to go. So I say, okay, let's go. I drive them to the house, but this time it was dark. The only thing you can see is a full moon. So when we got near the house, we see the house in the moonlight with the woods around it. But when we got close to it, we saw that there were dirt roads next to the house and a canal that rode side by side. So my friends say, let's take the dirt road and see if we can go behind the house, see if we can get in. First, all the house was abandoned. You could tell just when you got close to it. So back to the story, we drive on this dirt road to the back of the house, and then I did a U-turn and park just in case we need to get out of there fast. We got out of the car, started to walk to the back of this house. My friends were joking about it, saying, nothing's going to happen, it's just a dumb house. They started to get closer to the house, and they were making animal noises, and one of my friends made a goat noise. That's when we heard a different goat noise so loud, it was mimicking my friend. You can tell it was not actually a goat because it was loud, and it was like it was right next to us. We started to run back to the car as fast as we could. We took off. We were so shocked about it, like, what just happened? Well, a month passes by, and we're talking to another friend about it and what happened to us. And yes, it was night again, and he wanted to go see it, so it took us a couple hours to convince him to go back. But I was not going to drive. We saw the house. It was still abandoned. And we started to drive on the same dirt road. And then we saw this light flashing on top of the trees and moving. We thought we were seeing things. My friend who was driving did a U-turn when he could make one. When he did, we saw that light, and this time it was not moving at all. So we started to move. That's when the light moved. We hit the gas, took off, but I felt like something was chasing us. It stopped when we were far away from the house, but to this day I still get goosebumps about it. Weirdo family member Amy Sine sent in this one. I have a few stories for you. One that comes to my mind often is when I was in the 8th grade and my family was throwing a surprise 60th birthday party for my grandfather. We got his sister to fly in from California back to us in Philadelphia. I'd always heard of her but never met her until this time. I went to bed at my normal bedtime the night before the party and my aunt was staying at my house to hide her from my grandfather. I left my aunt and my mother in the kitchen and said goodnight. At some point in the middle of the night, I woke and looked down the hallway of our home and I saw a light downstairs. I figured my aunt and mother were probably still up catching up in the kitchen. I got halfway down the steps and I heard talking and music. The steps faced the front door of the house. The kitchen was in the back of the house. The music wasn't anything I'd ever heard my parents play. It was big band, and my parents' music ranged from 50s to 70s rock. I leaned over the railing to look at the back of the house, toward the kitchen. You can't see the kitchen from the steps directly, but my stepfather had put in mirrors in the archway alcove between the living room and the dining room, so you could see a reflection of the kitchen door through the mirror. The kitchen light was on, and the music was clear as day. There were muffled voices, not distinct enough for me to understand, and the sound of clinking dishes coming from the kitchen. I froze, and the hair stood up on the back of my neck. I knew at that moment that if I went into that kitchen, I was not going to find my mother and aunt. I turned right around and hightailed it right back to my bedroom and hid under the blankets, wondering who was in our kitchen, the room right beneath my bedroom. The next morning, after my stepfather had left for work, I found my aunt and mother in the kitchen talking about the party and updating each other on events since the last time they saw each other. I told them what I had heard and saw, and they both stared at me like I was crazy. They said that they had in fact gone to bed not a half hour after I did. It was not them in the kitchen in the wee hours of the morning. My mother made me tell her the story over again and was convinced it was the old lady that previously lived in our house. Over the 10 years from the time I was 8 to 18, I had had many experiences in that house, from doors opening by themselves to a bathroom faucet turning on right before my and my cousin's eyes. Nothing ever felt malevolent or out to harm me, but all the same, it did scare me and caused me to sleep with my head under a comforter in the heat of the summer or run into my mother's room with my blanket and pillow to sleep next to her bed on the floor. The second story is a story of my mother's experience. Her mother, my grandmother, they were very close, and she passed away a few months before this. She was alive when the house was purchased and helped us paint and repair the house, but she died before we actually moved in. My mother had sent me off to school and decided to lay on the couch for a nap before starting her chores for the day. She was about to drift off and heard the floor in the dining room creaking like someone was walking around the table. She immediately thought that she'd open her eyes and see me standing there in my Catholic school uniform with some excuse as to why I needed to stay home that day, but she couldn't open her eyes. When somebody touched her shoulder, her eyes suddenly opened, and she saw her mother standing there, dressed in her favorite shirt, smiling at her. The strange thing was that she had a yellow ribbon tied around her arm. My mother blinked, and Grandmom was gone. That experience was the topic of dinner that night, and I had just learned about purgatory in religion class, and it said that Grandmom was stuck in purgatory and needed our prayers to get into heaven. That was when I started praying for my grandmom every night, and I haven't stopped. My grandmom and I were baptized Catholic together from Protestant, so I could attend local Catholic school, and we went to church together every week until she passed away. My mother was a single mom, and we lived with my grandparents until I was 8, and then she married my stepdad, so I was extremely close to my grandparents. She went to work one day, had a massive heart attack, and died at the hospital that day, and I never saw her again. It broke my heart to have somebody just disappear from my life like that. I always said my grandmother smelled like the color yellow and spring. It's what came to my mind when I smelled her pillow. Well, I was having a rough time still dealing with her loss and moving into a new house with a new dad. I prayed to my grandmom one night, really hard, practically crying. When I woke up in the morning, my room smelled like my grandmom, the smell of spring and the color yellow. I called my mom into my room, and she smelled it right away. She actually kept me home from school that day, and we spent most of the day in my room talking about grandmom. That night, she had my grandfather and my aunt come to dinner. I took my grandfather into my room, and he just sat on my bed and wept, the first time I ever saw that man cry. I held his hand and said, "You smell it too, don't you?" He looked at me and said, "I don't know how this is possible." Well, for weeks I refused to let my mother wash my bedding, but she eventually did it while I was at school. One thing my grandfather had given me after Grandmom passed away was her pillow, because of the way I stuck my head in it and smelled her. The adults got a kick out of my reaction. That pillow smelled like my grandmom for years. I slept with it until I was an adult and married. My husband never really understands why I get so upset if he borrows that pillow to sleep on. The darn thing was flat as a pancake, and by the time I put it in a plastic bag for safekeeping, it was starting to dry rot. I still have it, though. Another time I went to the cemetery with a cousin to visit my grandmom and her mother, who passed from breast cancer the year before. I sat at grandmom's grave, and my cousin went to her mother's a few spots over. I quietly spoke to my grandmom, telling all my news and how I still missed her dearly. I said, "I love you," and the touch sensor on my Jeep went off. Beep, beep, beep. Not the actual alarm, but the beep to say a ball hit your car or someone tapped the bumper. I looked around to see if my cousin heard it. She didn't, and I said, "Grandmom, I love you." Beep, beep, beep again. I ran to my cousin and told her what had happened, and she told me to say it again. I did, and sure enough, the touch sensor sounded again. Beep, beep, beep. We repeated this at least 4 times with the same reaction. We were ecstatic. Grandmom was hearing us and reacting. Sorry this was so long, but once I started typing, I couldn't stop. I have more stories because, for some reason, things just happened to me or around me. Or maybe I just noticed them more than other people, but I'll save those for another time. Thank you again for your podcast. I really enjoy the variety and the sound of your voice. So nice to hear you talk about depression. Thanks so much. And seriously, I love how you call out the people with nonsense reviews. That is so awesome. This next one comes from Chris Tyner. I was listening to your Haunted North Carolina episode, and I wanted to share my encounter with you. I'm from the small town of Lumberton, North Carolina. We have a local legend of a ghost that haunts one of the cemeteries here in town. Her name is Claire Townsend. The legend goes that Miss Townsend was set to wed in 1912. However, she passed away the night before her wedding day. She has been seen walking through the cemetery at night wearing her wedding gown. My encounter happened back in 2010. Some friends and I went to the cemetery looking for the ghost. It was an easy trip. Turned right, left, and the cemetery was there from my apartment. We got out, flashlights in hand, and walked through the cemetery. It took us a while to find her grave, but there it was, a headstone with a statue of a lady draped in a gown sitting on her headstone. I brought my digital camera, and the guys posed with the headstone in provocative ways, and afterwards we packed up and I came home. When I got home, I was sitting in the living room on the laptop. Beside me was a side table with a pillar candle sitting on it. The candle has never, ever been lit. I was typing on the laptop when I noticed, out of the corner of my eye, a stream of smoke coming off the candle. I turned my head. No smoke. I wiped my eyes and started back to typing. Again, out of the corner of my eye, I see the stream of smoke again. And again, I turn my head. But then again, no smoke. I rubbed my eye again and then went back to the computer. Again, a stream of smoke is coming from the candle. I turned and looked again, no smoke. Frustrated, I said out loud, "I don't know who you are, but you do not help with the rent. You do not help me with cleaning, and you don't help with the groceries. You do not belong here. In the name of Jesus, I command you to leave now." And just like that, the encounter was gone. Here's a story submission from a listener who gave us the name of Roxy. I've always been an odd person, finding weird things cute or adorable, such as sharks or raptors. Even my family found me very weird. When I was very young, around 6 or 7 years old, I had 2 incidents that stood out to me for most of my life that followed. The first one, which I had forgotten about due to the second that I'll tell later, was a bit more harrowing and mysterious. One clear summer afternoon, my brother and his friend decided to go play up the hill from our house, most likely going towards the woods and run through the creek that was nearby. I'd followed him a few times, wanting to play as well, but being told that I couldn't because I was a girl and too young to do what they did. I was out to prove them wrong that day. For the sake of his privacy, I'll call my brother Devin and his friend Peter. As they walked up the hill along the road, Devin and Peter tossed some rocks at the mailboxes that they passed, shouting triumphantly when they landed a hit or stamping a foot and saying, "Shoot!" when they missed. I crept along quietly behind them, trying to make sure that I wasn't seen, which was harder for me than most people at the time. I'd made sure to wear something I didn't mind getting dirty. That way I could change back into my dress when I returned home, so our mother wouldn't yell at me later on. She hated that I was more of a tomboy, and had always made it known to me that she'd wanted a girl that would wear the frilly dresses, like those China dolls that you saw in stores. As we neared the top of the hill, Devin looked behind him, seeing me before I could duck behind the nearest bush. "Get out here, Terry!" He knew I hated that nickname, and he used it any time he could. "I thought I told you to not follow me. You're too little to play with me and Peter. I'm not getting into trouble with Mom if you get hurt on my watch." He tried to give his best "I'm the big brother" speech that he could, which only made me that much more determined. "Go home now. Don't you have some book to read or something?" Well, at this, they both laughed, making fun of me and calling me names like bookworm, nerd, etc. What can I say? Even brothers can be cruel when they want to look good to their friends. "I'm not going anywhere, Devin," I shouted back, tears threatening to come out from the name-calling. "I'm just as good as you at climbing trees, if not better. You won't chase me off today." They continued to laugh at me, though. I'm not really sure if it was still because of the names they'd thrown at me or if they thought I was full of it because I was a girl, and a small girl at that. I was maybe 3'8" at the time, while my brother was pushing 5 feet, as was Peter. "You?" Peter snorted. "You couldn't even win a game of hide-and-seek against us." They both burst out laughing. "I bet I could," I shouted back, my face turning red with anger. I hated being treated like that. "Fine," Devin said. "You win. You can come with. We win, you go home. Like a good little girl." More snickers. "Fine." We walked a little further up the road to a house that was empty. The owners were on vacation at the time and had a pretty big backyard. Nice enough people, though their son was a little weird. "We can use this yard to play. They won't mind," said Peter. "You have to be it first, Terry." I nodded, going up to the lone tree in the front yard to start counting. Before we could start, Peter spoke up. "Just be careful. I heard there was an escaped prisoner on the loose in town today," he said. "They said he likes to run around and terrorize little girls." I could tell he was just trying to scare me, so I just closed my eyes against the tree and started counting loudly. They laughed and ran off. To hide, I thought, but I found out later on that they'd actually snuck off to the forest, leaving me there alone so they could play without me. I finished counting, running to the backyard, yelling, "Ready or not, here I come!" I looked everywhere I could think of, inside the bushes. I could fit almost everywhere, given my size, behind the trees, under the porch. While I was searching, I had this weird feeling of being watched. As I went to check behind the trees once more, I looked back at the house. I can still feel my eyes widen in terror when I saw the man standing there. He was wearing a hockey mask, jeans, and a jean jacket. His head was tilted to the side like a puppy dog, a knife in his hand. Then he started walking towards me slowly, like he was toying around with me. I backed away and ran behind the hedge bushes that led to the front yard. Keeping low to the ground, I crept to the small opening that I could fit into and tried to be as quiet as I could. I waited for what felt like hours, but was probably just 10 or 20 minutes. I peered out of the bush, trying to find the man. When I was confident he was gone, I came out of the bush, slowly, crawling on the ground so I wouldn't rip my shirt on the branches hanging as I came out. Just as I finally got out of the bush, I felt a hand close down on my shoulder. I screamed. The man in the mask had me in a really strong grip to my shoulder. He never said a word, though, barely made a sound. Still looked at me with a tilted head, like I was something curious and interesting that he found to play with. I struggled as best I could, but not moments after he caught me, I was thrown to the ground and a knife was inserted into my shoulder, over and over again. I could barely breathe. I could feel my shoulder grow warm and wet, the ground becoming covered in my blood. My heart was pounding in my ears until suddenly everything went silent. I felt like things were moving in slow motion now, my attacker's face turning from side to side, still reminding me of a curious puppy. It was the last thing I could remember seeing before I passed out from blood loss, feeling cold and barely breathing. I woke up a couple hours later in the same backyard, the sun starting to set behind the trees. The pain in my shoulder and chest had nearly gone, and as I sat up, I could find no cut marks or blood on my clothes, nor on the ground where I had laid in the grass. I got up, cleaning the grass off myself while wondering if I'd imagined it all before feeling a sharp pain in my shoulder and a small heaviness in my lungs as I breathed in deeply. Aside from those signs, there was no physical way to tell that anything had transpired while I'd been left alone on that hilltop backyard. I made my way back down the hill, walking home while trying to keep an eye out for the weird man with the knife. By the time I got in front of my house, I looked up onto the front porch and noticed my mother in the kitchen, and my brother was sitting in the living room in front of the TV, waiting for dinner. "Where were you, Slowpoke? Mom was starting to get mad that you were out so late." "I was still in that backyard looking for you and Peter," I said back to him. He looked at me with bewilderment on his face. "What do you mean? Peter and I went past there on my way home, and you weren't anywhere around. I thought you went back home, until I got here anyway." I glared at him while sighing heavily. "You didn't have to leave me there, you know. That was pretty mean of you." "Get over it. It's not like you got hurt," he scoffed. "At least you got home in time for dinner. I did not want to be the one to get into trouble for not knowing where you were." With that, he turned his attention back to the TV, and I stomped off to our room, which was between the living room and kitchen, to change my clothes into clean ones before heading to the bathroom to wash up. Even at that age, I knew no one would believe me if I told them my story when there was no actual evidence of it. I put the whole thing out of my mind, though I never stopped getting the feeling of someone watching me, as it happened that day. About a year later, the second most memorable thing happened. While playing in my driveway after a heavy rainstorm, my brother started throwing pebbles into the puddle that I was crouched in front of, splashing me with the water and getting my outfit all muddy. After a few of those, I yelled back at him to stop, noticing my mother at the end of our driveway talking to someone she knew that was in a car. I can't remember who it was, only the color of the car, tan. I turned my attention back to the puddle in front of me, holding a small twig and twirling the water around to make swirls in the dirt beneath it. The next thing I remember was my mother's scream, the feeling of a weight on my head and an oddly familiar warmth dripping down my face. After that, I was in the bathroom, held by my mother's arms and hearing the shower going. I felt the warmth all over my head now, my heartbeat pounding in my ears. The next moment, I was on the living room floor, my head lying on a couch pillow, a pillow she never let us use for resting before now. I wondered what I had done to deserve getting to use it. I don't remember much from the next 2 or 3 weeks except what I've been told. I was taken to the hospital in an ambulance, getting surgery and a metal plate in my head from where I had been hit by a muddy pipe the size of a 2x4. Over the next 12 years, the only event from my childhood that I'd remember was getting hit in the head and forgetting a few weeks of my life. I'd completely blocked the incident a year earlier until I had another life-changing event. I won't go into detail with that. Just know that it renewed my feeling of always looking over my shoulder. It wasn't until I met my future husband that I started to feel an ounce of calm once more. Now, almost 28 years later, I'm still unsure what really happened that day. Looking back, I'm positive that I had died in that backyard, alone and cold. How I woke up without a scratch on me has been the biggest mystery that I will never be able to solve. This story comes from Eddie Perkins. This will be a somewhat short story, but it is a true story. When I was about 7 or 8 years old, almost 45 years ago, we had a family sleepover because some cousins and their parents had come to visit from Delaware. They all decided to stay at my Aunt Beulah's house because it was big enough to comfortably sleep the amount of people that were all there due to the visitation. The kids all played games downstairs in the living room, and most of the adults were seated in the kitchen talking among themselves until it was time for us to call it a night. This house was an older 3-story house, and until this time, I had never stayed the night there. I'd always just visited with my parents and then left to go home later. All the children had slept downstairs in the living room on the floor, and the adults all slept in beds upstairs. This particular event scared me so bad that for years I wouldn't talk about it with anyone, even my parents, which I thought probably wouldn't believe me anyway. I can remember this event like it was yesterday, even though it has been so long. All of us kids were sound asleep, and as far as I knew, so were all of the adults sleeping upstairs. I cannot recall what time it was, I just knew that it was very early in the morning because this old house had that damp, cold, atmospheric feel to it, when something woke me up straight out of a dead sleep and I sat straight up. I felt like I was dreaming, but at the same time, I felt like I was wide awake. It's a very weird thing to experience. I guess I fit right in with all the rest of the Weird Darkness weirdos, lol. Anyway, getting back to the story, whatever woke me up also drove me to the foot of the stairs. This staircase was a typical staircase where there's a flat area between the rows of steps that lead upstairs all the way up to the third floor. I found myself at the foot of the stairs, gazing up them like something wanted me to see it appear. And it did. After what seemed like forever of me gazing upwards, all of a sudden, coming around the blind spot around the corner from the second floor was this younger woman engulfed in a blue haze and moving as if it were an escalator that led down from the top of the house. I'd never before seen an apparition such as this, and I was so scared. I felt like I couldn't even move a finger, let alone any other part of my body. As I stood there trembling with fear, the apparition just slowly kept getting closer and closer until finally she was right in front of me and screamed into my face like she was screaming for somebody to help her in some way. At this point, I was so scared that I lost my bladder, and I don't think I even realized it. I woke up the next morning with all the kids laughing at me because they said that I peed myself because my pajama bottoms were all wet. I think what most people say about a person being traumatized is true. They tend to bury that memory in the back of their mind for quite some time. Later on in life, though, as an adult, I decided to become a part of a paranormal research team while living in Texas. Boy, could I tell you some stories from that time, and I probably will at a later date. I chose to become a paranormal investigator because I wanted to help people or kids that I come in contact with that might have gone or is going through what I went through back then. This story comes from Weirdo family member Jaya Romo. I might be butchering that name, and if so, I apologize. Here's the story. When I finished grade school in 1998, my parents decided that I'd go to a high school in the nearest city. The city is Iloilo City in the Philippines. It was 4 hours by car from our little town of Estancia. My mom found an all-girls boarding house, which is a mile away from the Iloilo National High School. This house was a newly restored and remodeled old Spanish house. There are a lot of preserved Spanish houses in the Philippines because Spain colonized the Philippines for over 300 years, so it's common for these houses to be used for business. It was a two-story house with a staircase that's outside the first floor and a terrace on the second floor. The downstairs was used for the owner's real estate business office, and the upstairs, consisting of 7 rooms, was the all-girls boarding house. The first 2 rooms have access to the terrace, and these 2 rooms are connected by a Jack and Jill small bathroom. I rented the smaller room, and 3 other girls were renting the other big room. When you go out of our rooms, you see the other rooms on each side of a wide walkway with a family-sized dining table in the middle and a big kitchen with a huge window looking over Lopez Mansion. I and my board mates had a lot of paranormal experiences in this house, but for now, I will just share mine. It was Valentine's Day on a Saturday night. It was just me and my board mate, Leah, because the rest of the girls either went home for their hometowns or they were out on a date. We both decided to sleep in my room and started getting ready for bed. I was brushing my teeth inside the Jack and Jill bathroom with the other door closed with a barrel bolt lock and the other door on the side of my room open while Leah was tidying up the bed. She suddenly teased me and said, "What are you going to do if there's a ghost there?" Then all of a sudden, the lock of the closed bathroom door moved as if an invisible person went and opened it. Then the door slammed open and slammed back shut, like somebody got mad and wanted to be out of there. We were both stunned. I didn't even finish brushing my teeth, and I hurriedly closed my side of the bathroom door. We both prayed and were silent for at least 15 minutes. Then Leah decided we needed to check if the ghost was still with us. Then she blurted out, "If you're still here, please knock twice." After a few seconds, we heard 2 knocks. That was my first paranormal encounter. Katie wrote in to tell her story about a shadow figure. "About a decade ago," she says, "the economy picked me up out of my apartment and firmly plopped me back into my parents' house in southern Denver. I adore my parents and get along with them really well, but I couldn't shake the feeling of being a failure and not being able to take care of myself financially. In hindsight, that was a common struggle for many of my millennial counterparts during that time. On top of this, internal political issues at my job of 4 years had encouraged me to jump ship and land in a less-than-stellar management job at a big-box pet store. The stress of this job really took a toll on me. Long hours of late nights followed by early mornings on top of really foul company drama caused me to lose about 20 pounds in my unhappiness. I blame my utter malaise on why I wasn't affected more by what I saw in my room one night. After a typical late night at Ye Olde Pet Prison, I made it home and headed to my room to unwind. Luckily, I wasn't doing a clopin and could sleep in the next morning before going back to work around noon. I turned on my TV, zoned out, and just decompressed for as long as possible before I decided it would be wise to get ready for bed. At about 1 a.m., I was sitting on my bed, gazing at whatever was showing on TV at that hour, and brushing my teeth. Out of the corner of my eye, I noticed an amorphous shadow float across my room. It was roughly the size of a basketball, floating about 5 feet off the ground. It appeared to my right, in front of my closed curtains, drifted toward my closet door, and then disappeared from view. Without really thinking about it, nor turning my eyes to investigate further, I remember thinking, huh, I wonder if that was a shadow figure like I've heard about. Then I thought nothing more about it that night. The next morning, both of my parents headed off to work. I was enjoying snoozing in the quiet, empty house when the vibration of my cell phone on the floor woke me up. When I picked it up, I had just missed a call from my dad. He'd already called a few times and left one voicemail. Of course, you know this sent off warning bells in my head. I sat up in bed and eagerly listened to the voicemail, hoping nothing was seriously wrong. "Hey, Katie," came my dad's voice from the recording. "I just wanted to check on you. Your mom had a weird dream last night, and I just wanted to make sure everything's okay. Give me a call when you can. Love you. Bye." My dad is an often gruff man. While my mother and I share a somewhat carefree and playful outlook on life, my dad is one who seems very grounded in reality. Given he spent his career in law enforcement, seeing the world in black and white is a necessity for him. However, he has always surprised me with how thoroughly he believes my mother and I on the occasions that she and I sense something beyond what we fully understand in this existence. I've told my dad about odd happenings that I've experienced in my life, fully expecting him to reject the notion that there is anything paranormal in our world. In reality, he always hangs to my every word and never rejects that what I've sensed is in any way fabricated. I called my dad back immediately. He refused to delve further into what my mom had dreamed of, but I could tell it made him nervous. He said to not worry about it, but he was glad I was okay and wished me a good afternoon and evening at work. Of course, his response didn't satisfy my curiosity, so my next step was a call to my mom. "It wasn't actually a dream," replied my mom over the phone. "I saw something in our bedroom this morning." My mom, being a school bus driver, rises before the sun each weekday and gets ready to head to work. During what my family jokingly calls the butt crack of dawn, my mom keeps the light low in their bedroom to hopefully let my dad gather as much sleep as possible. That particular morning, she stood by her side of the bed as my dad shuffled under the covers to roll over and continue sleeping. As he moved the blankets, my mom froze in place. "As the blankets settled," my mom said, "I saw a large shadow appear on his side of the bed. Very quickly, it backed away from the bed and disappeared through the curtains across the room. It made me very uncomfortable, Katie." She asked my dad to move the blankets again, trying to replicate whatever action he had made that could have caused a shadow such as what she had seen. No matter what, the two could not recreate anything to explain what my mom had witnessed. While listening to her, my memory of what I had seen the night before came back to me. "What time did this happen, Mom?" "Maybe five-ish? It was early, still dark," she replied. "I saw something in my room about 4 hours before that." After a moment of silent contemplation, my mother replied, "Do not tell your father. He's pretty freaked out over what I saw. He won't handle it well if he knows you saw it too." To this day, my mom and I have not told my dad that both of his sensitives experienced a similar shadow moving around the house. I still find it interesting that I witnessed the shadow enter the house through my second floor window in a smaller size with a non-threatening vibe. When it moved to my closet and disappeared from my view, it would have ended up in my parents' room next door from there. Did it wait there for the night, growing in size and maliciousness before my mom witnessed it exit through their bedroom window? We will never know for sure. Weirdo family member Debbie Simmons sent in this one. I was 18 at the time this happened, 1980. I lived out in the country where there were ditches and canals on both sides of the road, no streetlights, and I was heading home about midnight and felt really sleepy, but thought if I opened the windows and let the air hit my face, it'd help, and the next thing I know, I'm in a ditch. I remember it was next to an orange orchard, and remember my family saying never stop there at night because people camp out in there. So here I am crawling out of my car in the ditch and noticed a house with a porch light on, so I headed towards that, and all of a sudden, I see headlights pop out of nowhere, so I get back down in the ditch so that they won't see me. He stopped right where I was, though. I was scared, to say the least, but he was in a white truck, and I remember he wore a white turban with a white outfit, and of all things, besides, he had half of a watermelon in the seat next to him, with a fork sticking out of it, with a salt shaker next to it. Kept thinking, that's how I eat my watermelon. At first I started walking and said, I'll go call my mom and dad. And he said, I'm here to help you and take you home. I know I had a concussion because my head was hurting and I was fuzzy. I said no, and he insisted he knew God and he was here to help. I didn't know what was going on because I think I was in shock from the wreck. I said, okay, I'll get in, but I'm keeping the door open, LOL. In my mind, I was ready to run in case. Well, I look back now and remember he never even asked me where I live, yet he took me right to my house. I don't remember talking at all. He met my brother and then my mom and dad, and they shook his hand and said thank you. Well, the next day, I'm still kind of out of it, and my brother runs into my room and tells me the man that brought me home was on the news, saying he was found at the foot of a mountain and had approximately been dead for a week. I still get chills when I think of how God helped me and how he most likely knew if I tried walking home, I may have been kidnapped and killed. Thanks for letting me tell my story. And our final story for tonight, Randy Hogan sent this one in, but this is an original story of fiction, a creepypasta, if you will, and here is his story. In the 1950s, a husband and wife, along with their young 5-year-old daughter, moved into a beautiful Victorian-style house that overlooked the sea and even had a private walkway to a little pier for boating or fishing. The family was surprised to get the house at such a great deal and were even more shocked that they were the only potential buyers. The move for the family was a big change for them, as the property sat a few miles away from town, and town was a good 50 miles away from the nearest big city, which was their original home, and with no real neighbors nearby, the family would have to adjust to the isolation, which they figured would not be too hard, as the house needed renovation throughout the interior from sitting untouched, surprisingly, for the past 25 years. So the mother and father decided to convert the room at the very top of the house into a playroom for their daughter while they worked on the house below. The room was an interesting one, as it was obviously a previously converted playroom with faint images of tiny boats and fishes and had a bricked-up fireplace, but it was perfect to keep the daughter busy while the family worked. The family contracted local town workers to work on the house, but they all agreed somewhat uneasily, as the property gave them an uneasy feeling, and they walked around the property very cautiously, which gave the husband and wife an odd feeling that there was something they were not aware of. Work on the property went smoothly, and the young daughter, who found it very boring being stuck inside, seemed to now be having a blast, and when her parents would walk near the room, they could hear her laughing and having a fun time. But eventually they noticed she seemed to be talking to someone else, and when the young girl's mother asked her who she was talking to, she replied with, "The little boy who lives in the fireplace and wears a jacket with big shiny buttons. He comes and plays with me." The mother took this as an imaginary friend and really thought nothing of it, until one day when the young girl was caught out of bed early one morning, and luckily one of the workers caught the young girl as she walked on the private walkway to the pier, and when her parents scolded her, she said the little boy wanted to go play by the water. The parents told her the boy was not real and to not lie, but she replied with tears in her eyes and said that he was real and he lives in the fireplace. The worker who had saved her overheard the young girl's description of the little boy, and his face turned white. He then proceeded to tell the family that the previous family who lived in the home had a little boy who was not fully mentally developed, and the family was ashamed of him. The young boy loved to play by the pier and would always be seen wearing a small sailor uniform and a pea coat with big brass buttons. But one day the young boy was playing by the pier and he fell in and drowned, according to his parents, and in their grief they quickly sold their home and moved. But townspeople always had an uneasy feeling that something wrong had happened on the property. The family, now curious, decided to investigate the fireplace where their daughter said the boy came out of, and to their horror, they found a small corpse wearing a pea coat with big brass buttons, and there was a big fracture on the skull, which now, to everyone's revelation, the boy had not gone missing due to drowning. It was a case of cold-blooded murder. And there you go, another Fireside Frights episode wrapped up. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you do like the show, whether it be Fireside Frights or the normal show, please share it with somebody who that you know who loves the paranormal or strange stories, true crime, monsters, or unsolved mysteries like you do. You can email me anytime with your questions or comments at Darren@WeirdDarkness.com. Darren is D-A-R-R-E-N. And you can find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Minds, MeWe, and the show's Weirdos Facebook group on the Contact Social page at WeirdDarkness.com. Also on the website, if you have a true paranormal or creepy tale to tell, click on Tell Your Story or call the Dark Line toll-free at 1-877-277-5944. That's 1-877-277-5944. And if you're listening on the radio, be sure to also subscribe to the podcast where I upload episodes 7 days a week. All stories in Weird Darkness are purported to be true unless stated otherwise. Weird Darkness is a production of Marler House Productions. Copyright Weird Darkness 2021. And now that we're coming out of the dark, I'll leave you with a little light. Luke 6, verse 28. Bless those who curse you. Pray for those who mistreat you. And a final thought from Jon Kabat-Zinn. You can't stop the waves, but you can learn to surf. I'm Darren Marlar. Thanks for joining me in the Weird Darkness.